dream, Neo, that you were so sure was real? What if you were unable to wake from that dream? How would you know the difference between the dream and the real
world? It's the question that drives us, Neo.
What is the Matrix?
It is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth. You are a slave born into a prison for your mind.
The Matrix is a system, Neo. That system is our enemy.
Try to realize the truth.
What truth?
There is no spoon.
Human beings are a disease, the cancer of this planet. You are a plague, and we are the cure.
So you're here to save the world.
I'm trying to free your mind, Neo, but I can only show you the door. You're the one that has to walk through.
It seems that you've been living two lives.
I've seen an agent punch through a concrete wall. Men have emptied entire clips of them and hit nothing but air. Everyone who has fought an agent has died. But where they have failed, you will succeed.
So do you need guns?
Lots of guns.
No one has ever done anything like this.
That's why it's going to work.
Mr. Anders!
What are you trying to tell me? That I can dodge bullets?
No, Neo. I'm trying to tell you that when you're ready, you won't have to.
What's up, everybody? You're listening to Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture. I'm your host, Isaac Weishaupt, of no relation to the Bavarian Illuminati founder, Adam Weishaupt. You know this. Maybe you're too new. What we're going to talk about today, we're going to talk about The Matrix. Now, The Matrix films, and when I say The Matrix films, the matrices, as it were, the first three films, I'm going to go through each one, including the Animatrix, in some ways. I don't know how I'm going to do that yet. That might be a bonus show. That might be a bonus only for the supporters, only the hardcores. But I am going to cover Matrix 1, 2, and 3 in preparation for the fourth one, which is releasing December 22nd, 2021. At that point, I will do a show on that, I'm sure, unless there's nothing going on in it. But we know that entertainment, the movies, there's always something going on, and that's what I'm going to do for you with the Matrix films. This is a project I've stalled on putting together for years, because there's so much to unpack, and, you know, now, I didn't know they were going to have a fourth one, right? Could have fooled me, and here they come, making a fourth one, so I thought, I got to do it now, let's do it. So in this first one, first off, The Matrix, the first film, this is going to be a two-parter because it's too much to talk about. There's way too much to jam into one show. And then on top of that, I had to order a new laptop because when I started doing the HD videos, I didn't realize how big these file sizes were. Okay. And to be honest, I got my ghetto-ass MacBook and I've got like top-tier Kim Kardashian MacBook Pro on the way. Long story short, I can't do a full, this is like a 2-hour show if I do it all in one shot. And I don't have the storage space to process the data. So there you go. You get two parts for the first Matrix, and then you're going to get a one-parter for Matrix 2, and then a one-parter for Matrix 3. We'll see what happens with the Animatrix. I got to finish it still. So, what's there to talk about, right? The Matrix. You've seen it. We're going to approach this like the other film analysis I do. Should you watch it? Absolutely. What's wrong with you? If you haven't seen it yet, what planet are you living on? You weirdo? Go watch it. If you're listening to this podcast regularly, you got to watch the Matrix movies. All three Matrices. And come back and listen to these shows, because I'm going to plot spoil, obviously, all of this stuff. But yeah, go watch the movies. It's probably the greatest movies of all time. They are probably the greatest movies of all time. In fact, I got kicked off a Richard Hoagland show because we started talking about The Matrix. This is the trigger that got me kicked off of a legendary truther, Richard Hoagland.
Yeah, you know that.
I talked about it on my Rockfin show. In case you didn't know, on Rockfin, I upload all my episodes there, and then I do a Rockfin exclusive show called Inside the Mind of a Conspiracy Theorist. And several of those episodes are called Truther Drama, and it's all about drama in the truther community. And the most recent one I did was talking about how I got kicked off a Richard Hoagland show. And how he took my money and my heart with him. And yeah, The Matrix. We started talking about The Matrix, and that's what got me booted. And you're going to find out why. And by the way, if you're not on the Rockfin yet, Rockfin's where you get the video of this show. The next one I'm going to do, the next Truth or Drama, is going to be another one about me again. I like talking about other people's drama, not mine. But I got called in on this. Zachary Hubbard, maybe you know this guy. He's a gematria numerology guy. Was talking flagrant mad shit about your boy. And I won't stand for it. So he's getting truth or drama. We're going to talk about it. And, you know. You know, this truther community, we love to eat our own. We love it. We hate each other. We hate everyone. But I'm trying to change that. You know what I mean? Spreading love. To talk about the truth or drama. Whatever. It's fine. All right. Anyway. The Matrix. Should you watch it? Absolutely. Go watch it. It's this fusion of like spirituality, technology, cyberpunk era, dystopian AI, future worlds. Because in the 90s, there was this cyberpunk movement, which was really cool at the time. I mean, looking back on it, it's a little cheesy, but like when I did the Lawnmower Man film analysis, we talked about cyberpunk. But The Matrix was kind of like the highly polished cyberpunk entertainment. It had all this futurism, good versus evil, man versus robot. It had action, it had philosophy, but most importantly, it's a movie about love. It's about spirituality and love. And I'm going to talk about all these things. That's why this is going to take 2 episodes for just the first movie. So we're talking 4 episodes for all these movies, at least. Now, the film is rated R. For you Mormons out there, probably can't watch it. The Mormons don't watch the rated R movies. But I have no idea why this one's rated R. This was pre-WAP era. Maybe we were a more prudish community. I don't recall there being any nudity or grotesque violence. But, you know, these rating systems are very subjective, right? I took an intro to film class in college, and that was one thing that I recall taking away was that the rating system was set up, and it's kind of subjective. Like, some people just watch it, and they're like, yeah, it's rated R. I'd argue it's PG-13 at worst, but, you know, what do I know? I was exposed to a lot of dark stuff. I was watching horror movies as a kid. How long is the movie? Well, you're going to be surprised when I tell you it violates my golden rule. For being my favorite movie of all time, it's much longer than 90 minutes. It's 136 minutes, so almost 2.5 hours. And the sequels are the same way. The sequels are long as hell, too. You know, but like the Kubrick movies are some of my favorites as well. And those violate it. They're damn near 3 hours half the time. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. Who's in it? You know who's in it, but we're going to do it anyway. We're going to talk about it anyway. Keanu Reeves obviously plays the protagonist, Neo. Neo is the alias, the avatar, the hacker. Neo is in his dreaded day job. He is Thomas Anderson. He's the doubting Thomas, because there's a spirituality tinge to the whole movie. But Neo, let's look at that name, Neo, as in Neophyte, the initiate. He is also the one. They call him the one. And Neo is an anagram for one when you rearrange the letters. Now, fun fact, the role was originally offered to Will Smith. And he turned it down. Why did he turn it down, you may ask? Well, he wanted to do this movie called Wild Wild West. Good one, jackass. What's he thinking? That was a bad move. Also, another famous actor who turned down the role is a guy named Nick Cage. Yeah. He has some family obligations. That's the worst Nick Cage I've ever done. I'm sorry. You know, I sent a survey out and you guys said more Nick Cage, less Tom Cruise adulation. I was actually practicing my Nick Cage not even an hour ago for this and I completely blew it, but we're moving on. We're moving through it. Warner Brothers was also considering Brad Pitt, Val Kilmer, even the greatest actor of all time, Leonardo DiCaprio. And Leo apparently turned it down because he was so fed up with the visual effects from the Titanic that he was like, miss me with that BS, I'm not doing it. And ironically, the Wachowskis apparently had chosen Johnny Depp to play the role of Neo, but Warner Brothers wanted Keanu Reeves. Who was the right choice in the end? I don't know. It's tough to say without seeing these other phenomenal actors playing the role. I mean, Nick Cage as Neo? Come on. I want to see it. But it is what it is, and it is who it is. So, Keanu Reeves, who did a phenomenal job with it, right? Keanu Reeves is a pretty amazing guy. He's dealing with a lot at the time, too. I don't have his biography in the back of my head, but I think he was dealing with, like, the loss of a family, his wife or something. I don't know. Crazy stuff going on. That guy should write a book if he hasn't already. The female counterpart to Neo, played by Carrie Ann Moss, her name in the movie is Trinity. Trinity, of course, a reference to the Holy Trinity of Christianity, right? Lawrence Fishburne, he is Morpheus. Lawrence Fishburne from Apocalypse Now, one of the greatest movies of all time, Boys in the Hood. Hugo Weaving plays Agent Smith. Hugo Weaving from Lord of the Rings. He plays the role of, and I'm probably going to say this wrong, Elrond. And I found that curious because I've been participating in the Copy My Crypto, our new show sponsor, and we are looking at Elrond. Okay, it's a cryptocurrency. So I find that very curious. I imagine the nerds that made the crypto are probably Lord of the Rings nerds. I didn't know that. But honestly, I think Hugo Weaving actually makes these films. I think if you don't have Hugo Weaving playing Agent Smith, the villain, these movies would never be what they were. Just my hot take. Then you got characters like Cypher, played by Joe Pantolones. He was Ralph Cifaretto in The Sopranos. He was in The Goonies and all that stuff. Now, the movie was released March 31st, 1999. What's curious... Now, I was in basic training at that time. And leading up to basic training, I was in an apartment. I couldn't afford TV, right? Like cable. So I didn't even know this movie existed. I'd never seen a trailer. This is pre-YouTube, right? We didn't have internet in 99, right? I mean, we did, but not if you were broke, right? You didn't have internet. And I remember a buddy of mine in the military showed me this movie in, like, I think it was like the summer of 99. He had the DVD, hot technology of the DVD. And he showed it to me, and I was like, whoa, dude. He had just come back from Japan. He was deployed over to Japan. And he showed this movie because I guess it was pretty, you know, popular over there, obviously, because there's a lot of anime influence in the movie. But I remember watching it thinking, like, dude, what is this movie, right? Because, like, I was very intrigued by alternative schools of thought, kind of like Neo in the movie, I've always had the splinter in the back of my mind. And I'm still trying to figure it all out, but anyway. Movie was released in 99. The Wachowskis infamously both changed their pronouns and gender identities after the release of all the Matrix films. When the films were released, they were Larry and Andy Wachowski. Now they are Lana and Lily Wachowski. And what's curious is that just recently, one of them, I don't remember which one, came out and said that the movies, the Matrix movies, were actually allegories for being transgender. Right? Like in the film, they take the red pill. That's an estrogen pill. The splinter in your mind idea, that's the idea of someone who is assigned a gender at birth, but they don't feel like that is their true gender identity. In fact, that's the part that got me kicked off of Hoagland's show. I think he thought I was going to like talk bad about, you know, and I don't, look, here's the thing. I don't blame Hoagland. I mean, the truth or community isn't always the most, embracing of new ideas. Everything's a conspiracy, right? So I don't know if he thought I was going to go down that road, which if you know me, you know that I'm always pro LGBTQ all day. Now, which I think is humorous that that's how I got kicked off his show. And it's fine. You know what? It was a learning lesson. My fantasy in life is to one day get back on the Hoagland show and redeem myself like Neo redeems salvation of mankind with Morpheus. And that's what this story is all about. It's this fusion of so many elements. It's like it's a real thinking person's movie. And you'll hear a lot of people. Now get ready. You might get triggered by this statement. So, because I've talked to a lot of people about the Matrix movies. And the general consensus you'll get is that most people will say, yeah, I like the first one, but the second and third one, eh. And I couldn't disagree more. You got to watch all three. That's the whole story. I mean, it's just 1 7-hour movie, really. And it's because the people that only see the first one and enjoy it, they aren't considering how deep this messaging goes of the story. All these elements of spirituality and love as the main theme of the arc of the whole film trilogy. It's the hero's journey of Neo. And you got to watch all three of them to get it. I think the people who liked the first one were like Michael Bay fans of special effects and explosions and fighting scenes. And even though you get those in the second and third one, they give you more of the story in those. Right? But in the film, in general, Neo is the Christ figure dying for the salvation of mankind. There's elements of Gnosticism, philosophy of the evil genius. But yeah, and we're going to come into that in the conclusion, which will be part two of Matrix 1. Okay? So we're going to get into the film. I'm going to walk you through the whole plot. And fair warning, the Matrix, this is a massive, massive rabbit hole. Okay? Pun intended. This analysis could easily be 10 times as long, which is one of the reasons I kept delaying on doing this analysis, because it's overwhelming. There's so much to research, and I had to finally just call it, because I'm trying to get these shows out before the Matrix 4 releases, but it ain't going to happen. I did my damnedest. Part of me thinks what I'll do is, and don't hold me to it, I said I was done writing books, but I might compile all the notes from these shows and make one book with the images. And I'm going to put the images that I'll be speaking of on my Instagram at Isaac Weishaupt, link in the show notes. You better like and subscribe. But yeah, that's a good starting point. So let's get into the plot. Plot spoilers coming. If you haven't seen the movies, feel sorry for your mother. that's a boys in the, look at that, Boys in the Hood. I brought it back to Lawrence Fishburne. Actually, I'm just kidding. That's Menace to Society, which I think came out the same year. I was more of a Menace to Society guy than Boys in the Hood, right? All right. So, okay. So the film, it starts out, opening credits. We get that iconic black screen with the green Matrix lettering, the green font, right? And it shows us going into the Matrix. We're going into this new world. And this is truly the ritual on display, a mass initiation ritual of mankind. And the Wachowskis even said 2001 Space Odyssey was highly influential. I think it was like their number one influence for this movie. And that's what that movie was. It was this mass indoctrination, the red pilling of the masses. And that's what the Matrix is, right? And that's what happens at the beginning of the movie. They show us we're going into the Matrix. But it's confusing when you first watch it because you don't understand any of these ideas. And it just shows the regular world, or what seems like the regular world. But we know after watching them that they're in the Matrix. Okay. We see some police. They're breaking into this crusty old warehouse. And we're introduced to Trinity. She's in this dank ass room with a laptop doing her hacker things, right? Because in the 90s it was all about hacking. Everyone's hacking all the time. And the agents show up. The agents are like Hugo Weaving's character. They're the CIA looking guys with the ear wire, right? So the agents show up and they talk to the cops, and they're like, the agent's like, "We're here, stand down." And the cops are like, "We got it. We can handle one little girl." And iconic moment. They're like, "Officer, your police unit's already dead." Because they know. They know. That Trinity's a badass, okay? So they the agents and the cops, they all go to the room. Lots of iconic, cinematography. And I think this is like one of the bullet time effects where you had it was like 120 stationary cameras in a circle, and you know, it shows Trinity jumping and then like it's spinning around and then she's kicking people. It's pretty badass. So Trinity gets away, everyone's chasing her. Trinity's trying to link up with Morpheus through a payphone, right? Which is, the payphone is where they would bring people in and out of the Matrix. Which I'm sure if you're a young person today, this is very confusing, all of this. The idea of a Matrix or a payphone, I don't know which one's more confusing. But there's this scene where they're running across the rooftops and Trinity's defying gravity, and so are the agents. Fun fact, the rooftop scene was actually leftovers from the film Dark City, which I've done a big analysis on before for its Gnostic themes, which, spoiler alert, that's what the Matrix is going to be. It's got Gnostic themes in it. Another curious idea, and I'll put the photo on the Instagram of this. The room where they find Trinity is room number 303. All right. Which makes sense because of the symbolism of three and Trinity. You get it? And, three obviously represents the Holy Trinity, divinity, God. And if you get into William Westcott's book on the occult powers of numbers, you'll see that three is considered a perfect number. Interesting, he calls it the mistress of geometry because of the triangle, right, with the three sides. What's most interesting in the book, though, he says that the oracle at Delphi delivered prophecies from a tripod. Now, the oracle at Delphi obviously has its parallels with the oracle from this movie. We're going to come back to that. We're going to come back to the Oracle at Delphi. So hold that thought. Now, during this scene, we get these hints that the agents, these like CIA-looking agents, they're looking for this guy Morpheus. They're like, we need the hacker Morpheus. So you start understanding that there's like this law enforcement side of the house, and then there's like this hacker rebellion side of the house. And that's what the movie seems to be about. But wait, that ain't what it's all about yet. So Neo wakes up. We're introduced to Neo. He wakes up, his computer is telling him that the Matrix has him. Which is ironic, right? The computer is waking up people, and if you fast forward in time from 99 to 2019, we'll say, the computer is still waking up people. in the form of truthers and conspiracy theorists, right? And you know me, like, I'm pretty critical of a lot of truther ideas. I'm always questioning everything, right? In a loving, endearing way. But the fact remains that there's like this sort of great awakening happening of people actually opening up their minds to these ideas. Now, some people, like, they get their minds blown so hard, they're all the way down the rabbit hole immediately. And they're like, oh my God, lizard people are eating babies. And maybe they are. You know, what's funny is, like, the lizard people conspiracy, I used to think that was really wild and out there. And the last few months, I'm starting to believe it. I don't know what's happening to me. But anyway, regardless, there's a great awakening of everyone questioning authority, questioning institutions, large organizations, and I love that. I love that. I just always am like, let's be careful. Like, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Like, we gotta tread carefully. Question everything we're told, but tread carefully. All right? Because the problem with trutherisms is that eventually the end of the road can lead to the black pill. And then you're in this territory of nihilism where everything is dead and nothing matters. And it's like, man, that's not the world I want to live in. And I don't know what the answer is, right? I'm like Neo. What's the answer? Anyway, so Neo, he's in his little room. He wakes up because the computer says, hey, Matrix got you. And we find out that his apartment number is 101. Curious, right? Because Trinity was in room 303. And of course, 101 is fitting because Neo is the one. The anagram of Neo is one. And symbolically, the number one is the foundation of all things, which makes sense when we talk to, or when Neo talks to the architect in Matrix 2. Again, you have to stay tight for that. Stay subscribed. Now, and I've got photos of all this stuff on the Instagram. You'll see it. So Neo, there's a knock on his door. And the computer, before the door knocks, the computer says, follow the white rabbit. And he's like, what? He's like, whoa. Right? And to follow the white rabbit, this is symbolism of Alice in Wonderland. So some people knock on the door and they are trying to buy some goods from him. And he's got it hidden in a book called, I'm going to butcher the name, Simulacra and Simulation. And he opens it up and grabs a disc. And ironically, if you zoom in, which I did, and you can see the image, the chapter is called On Nihilism, which is very apropos, like I just talked about. But the people that knock on the door, the one woman, she's got a tattoo of the white rabbit on her shoulder. And Neo's like, whoa. He's like, whoa. I just saw the computer tell me to follow the white rabbit. I guess I'm going to follow them to the goth vampire club, the EDM goth vampire club. So he does. Now, fun fact here, the Wachowskis apparently made all the main actors of the film read this Simulacra and Simulation book. And I looked it up. I haven't actually read it, right? I didn't read this one. Usually I try to read them all. But like I said, this is a rabbit hole that could consume your whole life. I could literally make a year of podcasts about the Matrix. There's a million online sources and wikis and Matrix nerds and games. Will I get some of these things we're talking about off a little bit? Maybe. Am I going to miss some things? Definitely. Will I get you out of here in an hour? You know I will. You know I will. The data storage on my laptop will not allow it to go further. Now, the Wachowskis, they made everyone read this book. And I looked it up and it said, it was a book about reality and symbols in society and a shared existence. Right? The collective unconscious that we always talk about with Carl Jung and stuff. Right? Sounds really interesting. I should read it. It's not too old. It's like from 1981, I think, if I recall. I have a book called The Matrix and Philosophy, and we're going to go through this in the conclusion wrap-up of The Matrix 1, which is going to be part 2, okay? So don't think I just came into this without reading anything, all right? So the hacker that knocks on the door, he's like, hey, I want your little compact disc. Neo goes into the book, grabs it, gives it to him, and he calls Neo his own personal Jesus Christ. Now, this is the first of many references to Neo literally being the Christ. So like I said, he sees the girl with the tattoo, and he follows them to the Rob Zombie Vampire Techno EDM Club. He meets Trinity there, and he's like, whoa, you're the one that hacked the IRS. And he's like, Jesus, I thought you were a guy. There's a lot of, because you got to understand, these people write scripts, and the word Jesus shows up a million times and the word God a million times in these movies. On purpose, I believe. And she's the one that starts him on the hero's journey. She is the Sophia of Gnosticism. She is the guiding force, the goddess of wisdom in this tale. And much like we hear about when you research Joseph Campbell's hero's journey monomyth, her responsibility is to wake Neo up to the nature of reality as it truly is. And that's what she does in the movies. So Neo, we're at the next day now, right? And he's at work. He's at the dreaded day job, which the building that he works at is called Metacortex, which means to transcend the brain or the senses, which again, we're going to unpack in the conclusion to Matrix 1. He's not Neo. He's not Nighttime Hacker Vampire Club Neo. He is now Thomas Anderson, dreaded day job. Okay? And he's in his supervisor's office getting in trouble, much like your boy does at his day job. And he's told that every employee is a member of this company. Thus, if an employee has a problem, the company has a problem. And this is very hive mind, collective unconscious, or much like that book was talking about, the shared existence idea.
You have a problem with authority, Mr. Anderson. You believe that you are special, that somehow the rules do not apply to you. Obviously, you are mistaken. This company is one of the top software companies in the world because every single employee understands that they are part of a whole. Thus, if an employee has a problem, the company has a problem. The time has come to make a choice, Mr. Anderson. Either you choose to be at your desk on time from this day forth, or you choose to find yourself another job. Do I make myself clear?
Yes, Mr. Reinhardt, perfectly.
All right, now listen up. You know what time it is. It's time for Tier 4 dedication time.
Ooh, I like how that track sounds.
Might be the last set of dedications we ever do. But that don't mean nothing. They might come back someday. We don't know. You know, sometimes if you love something, you gotta let it go. And today we're gonna do our Tier 4 shoutouts for December. And we got, I mean, these are real. When I say Tier 4 is woke levels on fleek, these five people are, they're beyond that. Words don't describe the levels of wokeness on these. And I've also got a special message after I do it. Let's go down the list of who's holding it down in the Tier 4. We got John G, Jason F, John P, Joshua V, and Cheryl S. Some real true OGs. I appreciate you all. Thank you for the Tier 4 support. Now, I do have a special message, though, from John P. A special message. Now, listen up. I know this is sounding real smooth and real sexy, but we might shift gears a little bit. But maybe not, right? Maybe not. We're going to talk about a website. He's talking about this website, allchristiansunited.org. You know, Jesus was all about love, right? We're talking about love. With the site, it aims to focus the true meaning of being a Christian, a according to Jesus per the Bible, it's love God and love one another. And it's a fitting way, it's a beautiful way to end our Tier 4 dedications, is to talk about love, a Christian love, no less. But yeah, take a look. John P., he shared his story with me, and we've got a lot in common. But, you know, I want you to check out his website, allchristiansunited.org. It's focused on love. That's what we need more of, right? That's what we need more of. So check it out. Tier 4 dedications. I appreciate you guys, all the support you give. They're definitely staying woke. Thank you for your support. So yeah, it's all about trying to keep the sheep, or a better analogy would be keep the prisoners in the cave, in Plato's cave. It's this conformist, communist, hive mind fantasy of the utopia matrix. It's the metaverse, right? And he's about to get canceled out the metaverse. So he goes back to his desk and he's like, man, F this dreaded day job. Man, this is like my life story, I think. Anyway, he gets the infamous phone, the Nokia phone from a delivery guy. And if you weren't around back then, so he has his Nokia phone and I don't know, he hits a button or it rings and the bottom, it like a switchblade, like ta-ta, you know, like a transformer. And at the time, everyone's like, whoa, is Nokia going to make a phone like that for real? And it never happened. I think the closest we got was the Sidekick, which I always wanted. But I didn't get too broke. And yeah, anyway, so that was a big to-do in like 2000. It was like, when's the Nokia Matrix phone going to release? And it never happened. Now, Morpheus is on the other line. He calls Neo at his dreaded day job. And he's like, hey, the agents are coming for you. I'm gonna help navigate you out. And Neo's, or Thomas at this point, is like, what? He's like, all right. So Morpheus guides him through this labyrinth of cubicles, and he's in cubicle hell. And he ends up getting captured, right? And he gets captured by the agents because he has too much doubt in Morpheus' instructions. Because you got to understand, he's just in his cubicle. He gets this mysterious phone, and some guy is telling him all this stuff. And he plays with it for a minute, but he ends up being outside of Morpheus is like, go outside. He's on this high-rise building. Go outside, get on the scaffolding, and come down a million floors. And Thomas, a.k.a. Neo, he's out on the ledge. And he's kind of panicking, and he's like, oh, my God, is this happening? And he drops the phone, and he freaks out. He's like, oh, my God, I'm going to die. So he comes back in, and the agents snatch him up. But you can see that the name Thomas is fitting here because he's the doubting Thomas. He has doubts in Morpheus. He even says, this is insane. And it's just like the end of Vanilla Sky, where the world's second greatest actor, Tom Cruise, has to make a choice, and he has to jump because he chooses reality. I almost feel like Vanilla Sky and The Matrix are brother-sister movies. They're both about spirituality, technology, love, the nature of reality. Did I say that already? Both phenomenal movies. I think I think Vanilla Sky might have came out in 99 also. Someone just emailed me about that. Sorry, I didn't get a chance to write back. I've got a million emails right now. I'm trying to get these shows done. I'm in show mode, baby. So Neo's like, I can't do this. Because he has doubts in Morpheus. So he gets snagged up by the agents. Just like Dune told you, fear is the killer. Fear is the little death. So the agents, they got him in the police interrogation room. They're threatening him. They're saying, like, hey, we know you work a dreaded day job during the day, but by night you're a hacker named Neo. And you go to Rob Zombie Vampire EDM clubs. And this is another thing, another old guy perspective here. There was this really interesting part of the cyberpunk 90s movement with this idea of avatars and aliases and stuff. Like, that's kind of where a lot of the stuff launched off, and now you see it in Discords and Reddits and all this stuff. Gamer tags, crypto, NFT communities, all this stuff. This, like, choosing these weird tags, these weird alias names. So anyway, they're like, look, we know you do this alias cyberpunk nerd thing at night, and you can't do both. It's because he's on the path. He's on the path to shutting down the Matrix, okay? Spoiler alert. And Neo's like, how about I give you the finger and get my phone call? And they're like, oh, okay, that's cool, bro. How about we use mental magic to sew your mouth shut? And Neo's mouth gets sewed shut, and he's freaking out, and they put a computer bug and robot in his body, and he wakes up, and he was like, oh, that was all a dream. That was weird. Well, Neo, he at this point wants to meet Morpheus, and Morpheus wants to meet him. And because Morpheus even tells him on the phone, like, look, you're the one. So he's intrigued by this, as anyone would be. So he meets up with Trinity and company. Trinity pulls the bug out of Neo, and he's like, whoa, it's real. And Trinity is like, yeah, I'm going to take you to Morpheus now. So Trinity escorts Neo up to Morpheus, and they're inside this, you know, mansion, dilapidated mansion, much like we see in Fight Club. And you'll notice the house has black and white checkered floor, which is reconciliation of the opposites, some Gnostic ideas that we talked about many times. We'll come back to that. And I'll put the photo on the Instagram. Now, Morpheus, he tells Neo, you must feel like Alice tumbling down the rabbit hole. Because there's a lot of references to Alice in Wonderland, obviously. And Alice in Wonderland is entirely an initiation ritual, as I talked about in the book that I wrote about it. And you can see how the two films are very similar in that in Alice in Wonderland, they're shifting Alice's view of reality to let her know that things aren't what they seem. And that's what's happening with Neo. And then they have this great dialogue where they discuss the ideas of fate, aka determinism, versus free will.
At last. Welcome, Neo. As you no doubt have guessed, I am Morpheus.
It's an honor to meet you.
No. The honor is mine. Please, come, sit. I imagine that right now you're feeling a bit like Alice. Tumbling down the rabbit hole,
You could say that.
I can see it in your eyes. You have the look of a man who accepts what he sees because he is expecting to wake up. Ironically, this is not far from the truth. Do you believe in fate, Neo?
No.
Why not?
Because I don't like the idea that I'm not in control of my life.
I know exactly what you mean. Let me tell you why you're here. You're here because you know something. What you know you can't explain, but you feel it. You felt it your entire life, that there's something wrong with the world. You don't know what it is, but it's there, like a splinter in your mind, driving you mad. It is this feeling that has brought you to me. Do you know what I'm talking about?
The Matrix.
Do you want to know what it is? The Matrix is everywhere. It is all around us. Even now, in this very room, you can see it when you look out your window or when you turn on your television. You can feel it when you go to work, when you go to church, when you pay your taxes. It is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth.
What truth?
That you are a slave, Neo. Like everyone else, you were born into bondage. Born into a prison that you cannot smell or taste or touch. A prison for your mind. Unfortunately, no one can be told what the Matrix is. You have to see it for yourself.
Now, Neo, he denies fate because he's like, I want control of my life. And we get the big speech from Morpheus. And Morpheus explains what the Matrix is. He says it's the social construct, which we can all identify with. The world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth. And what's that truth? Is that he's a slave, born into bondage in a prison that he can't even see. And that's what a lot of truther people feel. And that's, you know, what got me into all this. There's a splinter in my mind. I don't know what the right answer is. I just know that there's something out there. Now, we get the famous scene where Morpheus offers Neo, at this point Thomas, I guess, right? Offers him the blue pill or the red pill. And obviously he takes the red pill. Neo washes it down and we hear the ominous clap of thunder, symbolic of Lucifer, the enlightened one. Or maybe just foreshadowing. And I believe it's at the end of Matrix 1, he goes to the door of light. And we'll talk about that and why that's a Luciferian idea. So he takes the red pill. They strap him into the Matrix. Here comes Cypher, played by Joe Pantolones. He gives this metaphor. He says, it's like, you know, you're like Dorothy going bye-bye. Say bye-bye to the Wizard of Oz, right? Well, Wizard of Oz is a curious choice here. Because Wizard of Oz, L. Frank Baum, who was a noted theosophist, follower of Helena Blavatsky, which, again, I don't want to throw too much at you, but like, there's this idea of the seven epochs and the seven cycles of time in theosophy. But as far as the Gnostic tinge of the film, the wizard in The Wizard of Oz is the Gnostic false god, the Yaldabaoth. So it's a curious connection here, right? Where the Wizard of Oz is the great deceiver, the fraud, as is God in the Gnostic viewpoint. So Neo, he reaches out, touches the mirror, and he crosses over. He is Alice going through the looking glass. And he wakes up. And now he's in the jelly pod. He's nude. He's bald. And he's gooey. He's so gooey. He unhooks the jack from the back of his head. And he looks around. He sees countless humans in these sort of pods, right? They're trapped in hell. And he slides down this ramp, goes into the water. This massive mechanical arm pulls him out. We're literally seeing a baptism of Neo. He's literally being baptized into the new world. And Morpheus even says, welcome to the real world. So we're watching, again, the spiritual element here is the baptism. So Neo recovers. He wants answers. So Morpheus, he's dropping truth bombs. He's like, they think it's 2199. They don't really know. They're in a ship called the Nebuchadnezzar, and they use the ship as a home base so they can hack into the Matrix to do things in the Matrix. Now, the Nebuchadnezzar comes from the Bible, Book of Daniel. Nebuchadnezzar II was the king of Babylon, and he has this dream that he can't quite remember. He's got a splinter in his mind, and Daniel tells him, he reads his dreams. He's like, God's going to crush all your kingdoms. And, you know, he rewards Daniel, puts him in charge of Babylon and all that. So they jam the big probe into the back of Neo's head. And now he's in what they call the construct. It's this white blank void. It's this computer program. And this is where Morpheus is trying to explain to Neo what's happening because it's too much to understand. And when they're in the construct, Morpheus stands exactly in the Baphomet stance of as above, so below, with one arm pointing up, one arm pointing down, and he says, this is the construct. Now, we saw that they were in the house that had the black and white floor. This is the same idea. It's the reconciliation of opposites. The opposing forces. The male goat with the female breasts. Now, does that play a role in the gender identity change of the Wachowskis? It could be. They flat out said that this was a movie about being transgender. Right? No judgment attached. I'm just saying, if that's what they said, we got to consider it, right? Doesn't really, you know, not meant to ruffle feathers, but that's what they said. Now, Morpheus, he goes through this philosophical discussion of, you know, what is real? And then he shows him what the world turned into, and he shows him the Matrix. Now, Morpheus keeps telling him that he's been living in the dream world. And ironically, he does it from a chair that has lion heads on them. And this sometimes could be the Gnostic Demiurge. And on the TV, you'll see it says Deep Image, which could be a reference to stuff like the Facebook AI project called Deep Mind. All right. And we find out that AI created the real world. You actually learn much more about this in the Animatrix, in the first two segments of that show, that movie. But Morpheus says, like, look, we gave birth to AI, which is interesting, because there's a quote about, oh boy, I'm going to butcher it. There's a quote about mankind giving birth to the new species. About sex and the organs and the machines. I'll try to hit you with that in the second part. But the idea is that a singular consciousness spawned an entire race of machines. And this is the foreshadowing of the possibility that we were warned. And this is what, when I watched the Matrix films, I got into Ray Kurzweil back in, you know, 2002 or whatever. And he talks about this kind of thing. And he says, yeah, that's the singularity. That's the moment where the machines take over. And a lot of his prophecies are kind of fit into this. So Morpheus tells Neo about the AI machines. They're harvesting humans in pods, using them as batteries for energy. They liquefy the dead. And we see this image of black goo around a baby inside of the pod. Which is curious because the black liquid is like the adrenochrome we've talked about in the past. Or if you listen to my show I did about the Epics War of the Worlds season 1, we saw that exact thing. Literally, the babies in the black goo, keeping the aliens alive. We find out that the first Matrix had a guy who was trying to wake others up. And the Oracle prophesied that this guy was going to return and free everyone from the Matrix. And oh, by the way, Neo, that's you, bro.
When the Matrix was first built, there was a man born inside who had the ability to change whatever he wanted, to remake the Matrix as he saw fit. It was he who freed the first of us, taught us the truth. As long as the Matrix exists, the human race will never be free. After he died, the Oracle prophesied his return, and that his coming would hail the destruction of the Matrix, end the war, bring freedom to our people. That is why there are those of us who have spent our entire lives searching the Matrix, looking for him. I did what I did because I believe that search is over. Get some rest. You're going to need it.
So they load Neo up with all the fighting software. He's fighting Morpheus in the dojo, showing him how the Matrix software interacts with people who are plugged into the Matrix through agents. Neo is talking to Cypher about the state of things, and Cypher, he reveals that he wishes he had just taken the blue pill, right? In the next scene, Cypher is actually in the Matrix talking to an agent over a steak dinner, and he makes the Faustian bargain, of sorts, to sell out his bud so that he could be in this blissful state of ignorance inside the Matrix. And the agents, what they want, so in exchange, so Cypher is like, look, I'm going to give you all the things you want. What do you want? The agent's like, we want the location of Morpheus and all these hackers. We want to take them out. And Cypher is like, bet, bro, let's do it. Because I want to be like rich and, you know, famous and all this bull crap in the Matrix. Now, it's kind of a weird role reversal in a way. Cypher, which could be a play on Lucifer, right? You got Cypher and Lucifer. Kind of like Robert De Niro's character in Angel Heart. But the agent is the one making the promises that he can have whatever he wants if you just make the bargain. So Cypher says, I want to be rich and famous. I want to be an actor. Anyway, so he makes the deal, and that's what sets off the drama for the first film. They're now back inside the Nebuchadnezzar. Neo and Morpheus and all these people, they're eating gruel, and one of the characters on the ship, Mouse, he's talking about, you know, how he makes these sexy computer programs and he can arrange for Neo to, you know, digitally bang one of these chicks. And he says, to deny our own impulses is to deny the thing that makes us human. And this is kind of a satanic doctrine, right? Because they're always about embracing any kind of animalistic impulses. And if you deny the impulses, that's a sin. It's kind of an inversion, right? So anyway, Morpheus takes Neo to the Oracle, right? She's the one that's going to have the prophecies. Now, what's curious is she is on the 9th floor, and the number 9 is interesting because in William Westcott's book, Numbers and Their Occult Powers and Mystic Virtues, he calls 9 the Prometheus because numbers will ascend up to 9, and that is it. They don't go any higher, right? Because once you get to 9, then you got to start over with 1, 0, 1, 1, and so on. And also 9 is the earth under evil influences. Well, we talked about that on our 9/11 shows, if you listen to those. So they get inside of the Oracle's apartment. And on the TV, there's some giant bunnies, which is, again, more Alice in Wonderland rabbit symbolism. And we see Neo go into the kitchen where the Oracle is, and over his head we see Know Thyself, which is, again, classic Socrates Neoplatonism. We're going to come back to that in the conclusion. And she says, don't worry about the vase. And he looks at her, and then he breaks a vase. So immediately we're setting up for this huge dilemma, and this is kind of the main thrust of the first Matrix film. This idea of calling into question determinism, destiny, versus free will. Morpheus and the Oracle seem to be believers in fate and destiny. Neo's not really sure. He doesn't really buy it. But it doesn't really matter because the Oracle tells Neo that he won't believe any of this fate crap. So it's a real, real paradox here. Neo doesn't really believe it, but somehow she knows that he doesn't believe it. And Morpheus obviously does because Morpheus thinks Neo is the one. So at this point, we've got the agents that have gotten the location of our hacker buddies. We got the Oracle telling Neo mixed messaging and Neo questioning the nature of all reality, fate, free will. and we're going to come back with part two, where we're going to talk about where this goes in the first Matrix movie, and we're going to get to the conclusion where we're going to go through some philosophies of Socrates, the allegory of the cave, brain in the vat, Descartes' meditations on first philosophy. We got a lot of stuff to unpack. And we're going to go through this book a little bit, The Matrix and Its Philosophies. So stay subscribed to the show. Check out the images on the Instagram at Isaac Weisout, link in the show notes. And until next time, stay woke.